1, 2, 3, 4.
It was intended for the human to support the machine to support the human at work.
And AI means something different to anybody you talk to, which is wild.
This is AI or Die.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to AI or Die podcast, episode 21. Reagan and Brendan, good to see you guys as usual. We're going to start with what's in the news, and then later we're going to have a guest, Mike Alvarez, join as well later. He's been a friend of the show for many years, and we're going to talk all about AI transformation, the future for 2025, agentic stuff. It's going to be exciting too. So hi, Reagan. Hi, Brendan. Thanks for hopping on. How's your day been? Reagan, starting with you. What's new in your life?
Day is great. I guess big personal news. We got a new car. And we got an excellent deal on it.
Yeah.
I won't go into the details, but let's just say my father-in-law is incredible at finding really good car deals. Yeah. So we were able to get a new vehicle for like the most insane deal ever. And I'm pretty stoked about it. So that's
let's
what's
just
new.
Say, I've not seen a car sell for that low in many, many years. So
it's crazy. I know. It's so crazy. And he's... Thankfully, my father-in-law works on hot rods and cars and whatever. And so he's, you know, he like builds them and redoes them. And so he knows what to look for. And he does full evaluations on the vehicle itself and if it has any issues. And so, of course, he looked into all of that as well. I think the guy who was selling it just wanted to get rid of it. And my father-in-law is known for some good negotiation tactics. So pretty pumped about that.
Yeah, congrats on the new car. That's awesome. Brendan, what's new with you, man? What's going on in your life?
I think it's big news for all of us, or not big news, but a good thing in all of our lives is that the Buckeyes won the national championship. So that was very exciting.
That's right.
I got to watch it after a delay because it was on too late here in Spain, but it was very exciting to watch. When the last time they won, I was at the game. So it's very exciting to like reminisce on their last Natty championship. So that was very fun. But yeah, other than that, it's just winter in Spain. So it's like 55, 60 degrees out, going for hikes and stuff. It's lovely. But yeah, that's about it.
I remember all of our Ohio, not even just Columbus customers, but Ohio customers were just like groggy and cranky on that Tuesday the next day because they all stayed up super late to watch the game too. It was a good time. Yeah. In my life, let's see what's new. Planning some travel out for the year, as always. Some exciting stuff coming up just with home renovation stuff at home too. But just more exciting is just aligning our progress, lots of growth. Lots of work on the design studio with clients that we have as well. And I can't believe, guys, we're already on episode 21. That's kind of crazy as well that we've been doing this podcast for this long. So it's been a lot of fun.
Our pod can legally buy a beer. It could celebrate the national championship the right way. So it's very exciting.
That's right. That's right. I'm going to target having an OSU football player join our podcast as a guest someday. I'll find one just on the street. Not even a starter, but something like that. Cool. Any other updates, guys, before we get into the news? All right. If not, I think the big news story for this episode, where are we at? January 27th, 2025, is this new tool called DeepSeek, or this new model that's come out of China associated to that. And I love all of the swings that especially armchair investors are making just related to that coming out and, you know, just the implications related to like how much does it take to build together a successful model. And as a lot of folks are reading into the details of it, especially from a security standpoint, like what are new vulnerabilities associated to it as well? Like, is it truly an apples to apples, or what are the key changes with this model versus a lot of what we've seen traditionally come out of America in the past? Initial takes, any of you guys, Reagan, you want to start? Any initial takes on DeepSeek versus OpenAI and some of the other tools out there?
I've seen a huge, discrepancy between people who have been playing around with it. I personally have not been, just have a lot of personal things going on that I don't have time to kind of mess around with it outside of what we're doing day to day, although I really want to. But just from what I've seen online, there are some people that say it absolutely blows O1 out of the water and others that say it's pretty comparable in terms of performance. But regardless, tons and tons of people are playing around with it. I've been kind of tracking it on X and follow a decent amount of people who are kind of posting what their experiments have been. And it is really exciting and just, you know, just the sense that there's new kind of advancements happening. Even if it is globally and outside of the US, it still keeps us on our toes. I'm a big believer in competition. I think it drives people to want to do better and move faster. And in some cases that creates issues, but in other cases it drives innovation. And so I'm just excited to see people staying on their toes in the US in terms of AI innovation.
Yeah, it's like the TikTok and then the quick flip to the other app as soon as there was that quick ban on TikTok as well. It's like people are just willing to jump on no matter where the app comes from. Like, what are the cutting edge capabilities that are out there? Brendan, what are some of your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious when it'll come into the enterprise conversations. I know it's very interesting, like for people personally, I think there's the same, like, what does the data processing look like? But that's true of every app that we use on our phone or everything that we use on the internet. So it's the same considerations. It's like, if you're using TikTok and using DeepSeek, like, is there really a net difference in the exposure that you're at? Not that I've used TikTok really at all, but I haven't had a chance to use DeepSeek either. I do want to figure out how to use it, but I put it in the same camp as Llama. Like, there is a lot of value. So like the big NVIDIA charge is a lot of that, like the infrastructure level, like questions that it brings up. But I still think it'll take a while for us to see this heavily in the enterprise just because of the review processes, you know, putting it as an API endpoint in Azure where it's accessible, like Llama is. Like, there's still a lot of those barriers that it needs to go through. So I understand why people are, everybody's been super bullish for very long on all the AI stocks. So it makes sense that this is what causes like a correction or change there, or like a, you know, difference in perspective. But I think for the part of the world that we live in, it'll take a little bit for it to come into like the daily conversation around comparing it versus using OpenAI or Llama, especially because Llama is more of a similar kind of comparison point, you know.
I am very curious how orgs are going to think about their internal policies for using tools, like from a geographic implication standpoint. And like, we haven't really had to build this into company policies with leaders we've worked with in the past, but I wonder if company by company, the leaders are going to start considering, like, what are the guardrails for employees around the source of the model and who's ultimately managing it? I think we've kind of taken that for granted in the past just because everything's been out of America, OpenAI and Meta and all those other teams.
Yeah, even with open source, there's got, you know, and I've not seen a pretty comprehensive way of evaluating toxicity or evaluating if there are any vulnerabilities or issues with baked in within models within the training process. Even if you are, if it's open source, you're able to pull it into your own infrastructure and able to run it accordingly. But just, and I've talked about this several times, but in the first wave of data science within the enterprise, open source made a really big really big impact, because you started moving out of these end-to-end platforms like SAS, where every company had their own statistical models built in SAS using their language deployed in their platform, to these open source architectures where they were leveraging things like Docker and Jupyter notebooks and Python and R. And so when you make that shift, especially regulated companies, they want to be able to understand the security implications of leveraging open source. Just like leveraging a package within Python and bringing that into your own infrastructure to run, you want to do vulnerability scans on the code that you're literally bringing into your infrastructure and running. And so even though it is not connected externally, there still needs to be a comprehensive process of evaluation to pull something like that in. Llama or, you know, DeepSeek, doesn't matter, regardless of where it's been developed or whatever. And in terms of companies' policies on if they allow something that's been developed out of China to be used, it'll probably vary, I assume, when it comes to defense contractors and government work. They will likely put harsher restrictions on something like that. I haven't seen really anything pop up that has been compelling enough where enterprises have adopted it to be able to pull in open source models. And I know people have played around with Llama. I'm not sure exactly what they did to evaluate that model from a security perspective, but we're going to see the exact same philosophy, I think.
Yeah, I'm also curious to see, because I know in the procurement process, they do check sometimes for like if people are coming from like North Korea or certain, like, I think they were labeled as like terrorist states or something. There's like some designation by which procurement teams look for that. And it does feel like China's getting into like the comfortable edge of that gray zone, right? Like, I wonder if people are starting to be more concerned about it. I do remember a project, this is, you know, 7-8 years ago, where people were talking about creating local replications of SaaS products so that when they traveled, did business in China, that they would pull it local And I never understood like if that was a valid concern or if that, you know, was just being overcautious or whatever that, you know, what would you want to use there? But overall, I'm just kind of curious to see what the attitude looks like, especially from a security lens going forward here.
Yeah, I think you're referring to like the adversary list, like who does the U.S. consider to be an official adversary to the country?
I think even past that, though, a lot of these solutions are still struggling with hallucinations, and like user trust is still low, with Apple having to pull back a lot of their Apple intelligence features associated to hallucinations when summarizing news stories. Same thing with, I know users who have gotten the pro level of OpenAI and ChatGPT, the $200 a month level, still showing hallucinations within the information that it pulls and how it serves you as well. So even past those guardrails and getting it in, I still don't think it, the enablement of employees to understand hallucinations and checking for that with a critical lens cannot be underestimated. Just even once we get it in, no matter how advanced the model is, they're still really struggling with it in these most advanced versions of it. Also in the news, looks like Perplexity is considering an AI TikTok merger as well, which is very interesting. I know TikTok's been looking for a buyer for a little bit. I am very curious as to what the implications of an AI company like Perplexity merging with TikTok and just how that could alter not only the user experience in the app, but also the strategic direction of the company and what they focus on. You guys have any reactions to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to understand what the motivation is behind that. Is it a data grab? Is it an algorithmic IP grab? Which I think there had been conversations about whoever purchases TikTok doesn't actually get the algorithm with it. And I don't know how true that is, but that was kind of the murmurs that were happening online, which I guess is like, you know, the major reason someone would want to buy it, because the algorithm is so powerful. That is it learning, you know, reverse engineering that algorithm and trying to figure out how to make yours better as Perplexity. They're not a traditional app like that. So it seems kind of odd unless you're thinking about it from the data lens or from the algorithm lens. And in those cases, I guess, but Perplexity has been kind of branded as this research-based company where it, you know, you go and get kind of sourced information from them. And it's more of like that Google search. And obviously TikTok is more content creation. So, and there are, I guess a lot of people do get their news from TikTok, you know, which has been talked about quite a bit. But is that considered a credible source of information? Is it a crowdsource thing of information? With maybe they'll use it for understanding disinformation and misinformation trends, because their whole value proposition is to be able to source information and give you the most accurate information back based on your prompt. So yeah, that whole thing is, when I first saw it, I was like, huh, okay, perplexing.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. I've not actually used TikTok very much for the search side, but is the search strong in TikTok? Because I know like Perplexity is kind of positioning themselves as a very strong AI-powered search kind of approach, similar to ChatGPT's internet, but I haven't actually used TikTok search at all.
Not as what I've seen, because I'm not a power user, but I have a lot of family members and friends who use it as well. It's more about like the way it pushes the information to discover stuff as opposed to search and find specific information that you're looking for. So that could be a strategic advantage that they're going for.
Yeah, because it does look like they're, I'm just going back to Perplexity's website for the first time in a while, and like they have the like the discover area where it looks like they're recommending content to people. So I wonder if they are trying to pick up on that. How do we show you new things that might interest you to get more eyeballs kind of approach? Especially because I see there's a lot of parity between the features for like ChatGPT's internet search and what Perplexity has at, you know, first glance. So I'm kind of curious if they're trying to differentiate further on the search side for ChatGPT, because I know ChatGPT's got a lot of functionality in that area and it seems like it's growing. So maybe it's like a, that's their angle that they're trying to go for.
I think the discovery side of AI could be very interesting. I think back to old sites like StumbleUpon, right? Where it's like, if only we could bring that back and help that serve ultimately what may be interesting to you based on time of day, your persona, all of these other things that TikTok's done a great job at in terms of serving information in a video format.
It's actually really interesting because I find social media so annoying, but it's still so addicting because there is that discovery aspect where you find something that's really relevant. Like LinkedIn, I think, is a great example because I find, you know, half of LinkedIn content is not great for me or not very relevant for me, but those little morsels keep you coming back, you know? So I think like Instagram is a similar experience for me. It's just like, most of it you don't really care for, but then those little pieces are super valuable. So maybe they're trying to like tune that ratio up, right? And then sounds like that's what TikTok does because it's very addicting for the people that use it. So
Well, consider this, you know, you go into a social media app looking for a specific bit of information, but then you get pulled off track. You get distracted by what's been served to you for a discover new thing. I wonder what the future of that looks like for associates using AI or searching for agents within their organization, just related to coming in to do a specific workflow, but then inherently getting distracted by discovering other interesting insights from the data or interesting workflows that they could impact inside of their organization, just as going in as an entry point and then kind of getting distracted by all the other cool stuff we got going on. Also in the news, something to consider, I feel this kind of back and forth, especially at the top of this year, just related to advancing towards AGI. And then, so, you know, Sam Altman coming out and saying, you know, we have not yet developed AGI, but we're working towards it. Like, how much does 2025 continue to push the cutting edge of what AI and AGI is eventually able to do versus how much are new, cheaper alternatives going to be entering the market? DeepSeek being the first one, but many more to come, just to try and match the existing capabilities, but at a much lower cost and a lower investment than has happened before. I'm starting to wonder if maybe the latter will be more of a swing in 2025.
Yeah, I think about it. I think it's really interesting because we should start seeing, there's so much money flowing into AI in so many different places and so many different ways. Like, I know there's the $500 billion number that's come out recently being invested. So I think just there's so much money out there now that everything should start moving forward. And I think it'll move forward on both horizons, if that's not too lame of an answer to say not either one, but both. Because I do think like the cutting edge will move forward. And then like that cheaper alternatives, open source will also move forward because there is so much pushing of this horizon of what's possible right now. I do, from my personal experience, and maybe I'm naive and I'll regret saying this when we see the next versions of these models, but I do feel like it comes down so much to the input now. Like Reagan mentioned, like has mentioned often, like the prompting is less critical to the success of the model now because it does pick up on the context, but there just feels like there's a limit almost of like the context you need to provide it and what you're trying to accomplish and those feedback loops and, you know, and how I'm using it. It feels like that's more the problem is like, it can go super far, super fast in a direction, but I need to keep pointing it the right way. So I do think with agentic and more kind of mechanisms around it to add that context, add that value, that seems like where the critical limiting factor is right now for me personally, rather than the actual power of the LLM, because the LLM seems very powerful to me, just my personal experience. But again, we might see the next thing that comes out and go, oh, never mind. Like it can infer all that context or it's already got all that baked in and it, you know, better experiences or your user interfaces that prompt you for that information automatically, you know. So I think I'll be kind of curious to see what happens like as a lot of these bets start paying off that people are placing and investing in AI.
Yeah, I find that I use it a lot for copywriting and I find that what's really frustrating is just the lack of sophistication in some of the copy that it does generate. And even though I am trying to correct it and push it in the right direction or nudge it in the right direction, it just doesn't seem like it can get there. And I know it's beyond where it was even 6 months ago or even last year in terms of the quality of the output and being able to use it very quickly without making tons of tweaks. But I still find that the level of sophistication and uniqueness in the responses is really challenging. Like it still creates a lot of general, like jargony outputs in a lot of cases. And when I continue to use it for the same type of information or the same type of prompts, I notice the same phrases coming back and it's like, okay, you know, there's really not as much novelty baked in, which I think might be the next step here, right? Is like the level of novelty. We're starting to get the advanced reasoning in place and DeepSeek, you know, they had claimed that that was a big area of focus for them was this advanced reasoning component, which is like being able to give you better context in your outputs or more holistic or generally correct context in your output. But I do think like the novelty piece is a really big challenge. You know, they started looking at the ability of these models to generate poems and things like that, like more on the creative side. And I think the better it gets at the general novelty of that, the better it will get at outputs as well. So I feel like that's the next horizon is to like get beyond that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Cause I do use it for more like creative stuff, like creative writing. And I have to give it the prompt, like, try 30 times, 40 times, because it doesn't, you know, it'll just keep going and then I can read the list and a lot of them are very poor quality, but then there are some like interesting ones. You're like, oh, this one's interesting. So it does require a lot of that iteration today to come up with something that's good and unique, right? Like it does take, it has like kind of scattershot. It can't really pick the best path for some of that more open-ended tasks.
Yeah, even when I pour a ton of context into it. Like, I'm not just asking a generic question, by the way. Like, I always say if you're, you know, you're going to get a generic output if you give a generic question and it's not very thoughtful and you've not added a lot of context. That's a given. But when I'm spending loads of time providing tons of context to try to get high quality output, I still get this like generic response. And to your point, Brendan, little nuggets of things that spark ideas for me that I'm like, okay, I can kind of go back with that new direction now, which is great. And that's really helpful. I just hope that that next horizon kind of addresses that.
Yeah, because that was certainly a letdown for a lot of enterprises in the past year, just not feeling like the effort that they put in and the amount of money and investment they made got out something that was novel enough or unique enough to actually support their workflows. Definitely slows down those late adopters even more just by feeling like it's not, you know, game day ready for them. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, guys, we have our guest coming in. Mike Alvarez will be joining in just a minute or so. We're going to talk to him all about AI value acceleration, 2025 predictions and challenges with AI adoption. So we're going to flip over to Mike A, and we're going to get into all of that with him. Stay tuned, guys. Hey, Mike, welcome to the podcast. I believe this is episode 21. I appreciate you joining today. How are you doing, Mike? Thanks for hopping on.
Doing awesome. 21 is a good number. So thanks for having me here.
Yeah, of course. And I was chatting you ahead of time just around some potential topics, especially related to AI value acceleration. So definitely excited to get into that. With every guest that we have join, we love for you to just provide a quick background for the listeners. Who's Mike? You know, obviously you've been a friend of the show for many years and we've worked together on different projects. But for folks who don't know you, who's Mike? What do you work on? And what especially interesting things are you seeing in the AI space that may be relevant to our listeners?
Very cool. Yeah, well, thanks again for having me here. Mike Alvarez, CTO of Noitsight, which is a consulting firm where we focus on value acceleration for projects, but especially AI. So my background's a bit of, so past, I'd say 10 years, started the data science practice in a Fortune 20 company, along with some of the analytics work we did there. I just learned a ton, you know, so earned a ton of scars, some battle wounds, right, and had a lot of successes along the way as well. And then after exiting that organization and joining Noitsight a couple of years ago, doing, you know, some fractional consulting, such as data consulting and AI acceleration consulting. But I realized there's kind of common patterns to a lot of the struggles we're having with AI. I think along the way, which I met a lot of you fine people, because you're trying to, you know, kind of take on the same challenges. So, and for me, I think it's, you know, over the decades, you know, technology is fascinating, but I think once again, we're, you know, having history repeat itself where people are so obsessed and focused on this really cool, shiny new tool, which we're going to see some more exciting, you know, kind of developments in this year in 2025. They forget a lot of the other things that have to come along with it. A lot of the human-centered sides of things, that's kind of where I tend to focus.
I'd say the human-centered side of things and the data-centered side of things. I was just talking to Brennan before this, just around still having data issues is hindering a lot of the AI efforts that we're setting up too. So I know we've seen a lot of like what folks are referring to as like operating model work for AI and like how do we manage our processes better, thinking about AI solutions that come in as well. And I'm sure you're seeing that as well as that AI value acceleration too, Mike, for sure.
100%, yep.
Yeah, so as we get into that, I think just being the first episode of the new year, it's also fun to talk about 2025 predictions. We were talking on the last episode just around how AI was really becoming more and more operationalized. And I think this value acceleration conversation is certainly top of mind. Are there any other themes that you're seeing just in a lot of the organizations you work with related to like emerging tech in AI? I know agentic's really top right now, but any other things that you're seeing in orgs you're working with for 25 as like a prediction that you'd call out?
I think, you know, 2025 is going to be the year of the agent, right? The agentic architectures, everybody's talking about that. I have another little effort kicking up with some folks I think we're familiar with, but looking at, you know, kind of data management, right? So how do you do, you know, how do you take on some of these mundane kind of routine activities that every company has and how do you, you know, try to build some kind of agent around them? And that's, I think that's really going to explode because I think as we take a problem and you look at an agent, you're like, oh, I can create an agent. But when you start digging into it, it's like, well, I probably need like 25 or 30 or, I don't know, 88, you know, think about an agent that can do a real small autonomous activity really well. So I think we're in the beginning of that trend, not quite as germane to this group, but, you know, robotics. So I think robotics is going to be huge. coming, you know, through 2025. I don't know. We'll see what else this year brings, but I know it's kind of, you know, I'm sure you guys are following the DeepSeek model that was released, and how now NVIDIA's, I don't know where NVIDIA is now, but they were down like 18% this morning. So it's like, you know, these black swan events just keep on happening. Like, you know, everybody's like, oh, put your money in NVIDIA. And all of a sudden something changes and wham, you know, so here we are looking at in a different possible future.
It's a continued disruption, and I'm excited about continued disruption, even within enterprise solutions and what's being offered as like that true value that they're seeing from AI, and like how they're thinking about how their operational processes, how their operational mechanisms kind of changed this year, especially. I think it's taken a lot more seriously, which is exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought that up, Mike, because I keep in my head going back and forth on whether or not this idea of specialized systems, like how much human intervention on the design side are we going to need as these models get more and more sophisticated? So that's kind of one paradigm that I'm noticing that's shifting even the slightest way over the last couple of years. Is just, you know, we used to have to spend a lot of time talking about prompting, and you still do, but like not nearly as much thinking mm-hmm. about the prompt as you did a couple of years ago or even last year. And I think the same kind of thing will start to happen. It's like as the system gets more sophisticated, you actually need less thoughtfulness from the human to design that system. Because it's kind of embedded in the system itself. And with agents, I start to think about, okay, at what point does that design paradigm change on these agentic systems because they get more and more sophisticated? So do we have to be as explicit? So if you look at a lot of the agentic platforms today, where you can go in and build an agent, it's kind of like Zapier, right? Where you go in and you look at your knowledge source and you create your prompts and you put your actions in there and you connect APIs and, you know, you're really thinking through the logic quite a bit. And at what point does that become like, do we have to do less of that? And the system kind of figures out a lot of the nuance on its own. And I think that's going to be kind of the tipping point of adoption for these systems, because today it's still really hard actually to design these agentic systems and make sure that they do what you want it to do. You have to be a lot more descriptive and explicit about what you want it to do. I don't know. Any thoughts on that evolution?
No, I think you're spot on. Cause I think some of the challenges, I think there's two to build an agent, you know, and again, this one side hustle I'm working on, I was trying to just reinforce that it takes years of experience to understand a problem to the point where you can then take that knowledge, you know, so if you can unplug that knowledge and plug it into an agent, and that agent's going to have immense value, right? But, you know, to your point, Regan, I think as the agents become easier to adopt, right, and if they're kind of imbued with that wisdom, now I think you can accelerate the adoption curve inside of companies, because now there's not going to be that resistance to change, because I think the agent can actually work very similarly to the human that's in that same role, or maybe even better. So I think that'll be the wow moment. I think when you plug one of these things in and actually does a better job than, you know, the people that are sitting in the seats, you know, hired to do those jobs.
There'll be a call out of like, oh, it's been running and serving this process in this way, and it hasn't been a catastrophic failure. It's finally of like a building trust step forward. I think that really needs to happen.
Yeah, and I'm pretty excited for that kind of intermediary point from where we're at today to like that idealistic fully automation where we need to create more interfaces or more visibility into like how it's making decisions or intermediary steps. Cause we're seeing that a lot with the Gen AI projects we're doing is a lot of, you know, I want to give it this piece and then it takes me to the next step automatically, but then I review its output and then go to the third step, right? Where I can correct things as I go along. And I'm wondering how we're going to be able, or I'm excited to see how we can iterate that feedback or take that feedback to iterate again, how that agentic reasoning is happening. I think that's going to be such an interesting paradigm of like teaching these, the nuance of how we make these decisions going forward.
Yeah. And I wonder if there's going to be like a bigger rise of frameworks, like standardized frameworks for a lot of core operations at a company. Like think about how different a call center is from one company to the other. You know, in a lot of cases, it's not that different. And same kind of thing we saw with project management, which Mike, I know you have a deep background in, you know, leveraging Agile is a framework. Yeah, a lot of these companies have adopted that. And if you get a really solid framework in place, then the agents can learn against that framework. And then it's just customization from there. And then you get those verticalized agents to be able to do very specific tasks. But I wonder how much more of these like frameworks we'll start to see that become standardized, because we all rallied around project management for software because a lot of companies were struggling with that, still are struggling with that. And so we try to go in and implement the framework and then execute against the discipline. And the problem is always people adhering to that framework, right? Well, if only everybody did exactly what the framework said to do, we would go much faster. And that's just not the case. But with agents, you can enforce that, which is really fascinating. And you do end up getting a lot of these like standardized frameworks. That's why we end up building software around them, because they're so standardized that they apply to tons of different companies. So I just think that's going to be kind of fascinating, because when you log in and you see any of these like agent libraries and you're like, okay, an SDR or whatever, like legal, there's like certain logic that they've built that I go in and investigate, like, what exactly did you do and how did you apply that? And in some cases it's pretty thorough, and other places it's pretty generic. And then there's a lot of work of customization to do on top of that. And I just think that whole paradigm is going to be really fascinating.
It's almost like workforce management for bots, right? Right. So you have policy. These are the guardrails, right? You have almost like job aids or SOPs, right? And then you have
cases they get access to, tools they get access to.
Yeah.
But the variation we face with humans today should inherently be reduced, right? Because these agents can follow it. But I still think about, just back to your point you opened with, Mike, just the adoption problem of like, how variable is it agent, across individual, trying to get that down as what's the best route? Is there even a best route, or is it multiple versions? And then keeping a log of how they act differently and how to check for those.
Yeah, and the problem's always been how brittle these systems are. That's why software breaks so much, just because it's so brittle. It's, you know, it's very baked. The logic is baked in. And so it breaks down in certain edge cases or scenarios. And that's where humans thrive, is that we're actually able to adjust and reason and move around that situation. And so this like really delicate balance between the brittleness of adhering and the fluidity of adjusting, and then inherently with the fluidity of adjusting comes variance, comes error, comes, you know, whatever else. So I think that's going to be really fascinating to observe too.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine how this is all going to play out. Cause if it does get to that, you know, I don't know if it's utopian or dystopian future, because it depends where you sit. What does that look like? Right. I mean, I think I'm waiting for someone to come along, if it's not been invented yet, like a bot bus, right? So everything's got to plug into it, and I can kind of, you know, I can turn them all off or slow them down or speed them up or pause them or do whatever, monitor them. So I think it's kind of scary thinking about all these bots kind of running your, you know, running your business, running your company, not having visibility into it. Because to your point, Reagan, it's that, you know, that adaptability that I think when someone calls in with something you've never heard of before, then how does the bot handle it, right? Or is that just then pass over to a human, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, and what level of sophistication around the reasoning engine behind that system can handle things like that? Like for a human, we can reason to an extent and use critical thinking skills, right? To like figure out what to do next. And so as those get better, are we just going to be more reliant on the systems versus not?
Yeah, I did start looking a little bit into agentic governance. And I think that's going to be really interesting to just try to figure out how to manage. Yeah, like you said, the sheer volume of decision-making these things will potentially make in production. Even now with simpler models, we struggle with a little bit of that visibility. But I'm kind of curious if you have any thoughts there, Mike, especially at the enterprise grade, like what barriers or what challenges you think they'll face when they try to put their first agentic into production from a governance side?
Yeah, I mean, I guess two parts maybe to your question. One, you know, I think agents would play a great role in governance, because there is just a lot of policy to go through and a lot of, you know, a lot of understanding the kind of rules, regulations, et cetera, of an organization. So I think in, you know, and very often governance is the thing that holds change back, right? Especially in any kind of regulated company for very good reasons. But I think where a lot of companies get it wrong is they kind of, you know, to me, governance should be kind of a pyramid where, you know, very few, if you have right policy in place and right empowerment in place, then very few decisions have to go to the top of the pyramid, right? And then really be met, you know, have a discussion over them and, you know, have people have a discussion around them. Unfortunately, it's kind of inverted pyramid, where it's like everything goes at the top, right? And we meet about everything and there's a control board in place. And I think that's where a lot of companies are right now with AI and agents. But I just think that, you know, the opportunity there is to really start thinking about these as, you know, kind of systems and understanding which things are permissible and which things are not permissible, right? And kind of give, you know, regardless if it's a person or a bot, right, give them the autonomy to go make that decision, i.e. Someone's order has been delayed. They call in and, you know, kind of said, hey, where's the heck my order? You can verify that the order has been delayed and you offer them a, whatever, 10% discount or a coupon on the next visit to your store, right? That's just a piece of policy or a rule you could put in place that regardless of a human or an agent, they can enact on that. But I think companies are, I said this a while ago, I think when generative AI came out, it shined a big spotlight on the white space in the organization because it's just things we never thought of before, right? So I think some things are not, we haven't thought of before, like who gets access to the tool? Where can I use it? What functions can I use it on, right? Which things are kind of not permitted? And whether that's a human or an agent, it should be the same rule. But I think until generative AI came out, we didn't think about these things until, you know, the change happened so swiftly.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that too, because if you think about it, if there's a company policy for that example you just gave, that policy sits somewhere in a document, maybe in SharePoint. And when somebody gets onboarded, they may read it, they'll probably forget it, or they may try and go search for it, or they may just know it from working there for 20 years, or they may ask somebody what to do in that scenario on Teams and get that information. And it's so interesting because it's so inefficient, and that's where you get non-adherence to company policy, and that's where you get the bureaucracy that gets in the way of like actually just making quick decisions. And AI has the ability to streamline so much of that. Like imagine having a giant repository of all the company policies and standards and being able to build AI against that, to your point, and check against those things and even just using generative to be able to retrieve and provide that information back to the employee very quickly in that context. I just think it's a massive opportunity for organizations to standardize in a good way, like not adding additional levels of bureaucracy, but just enacting the ones that they have so that they can more autonomously make decisions, which I just think is fascinating. And, you know, Brendan, Nick, and I are all systems engineers by trade. And I think a lot about that. You know, why do companies hire systems engineers to start with? Because standardization is actually great. It makes you move faster. Mm-hmm. But if you struggle to embody that and enable people to go against that easily, then it's an absolute nightmare and a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And you're making me think too, Regan, of one of our favorite podcast, you know, the All In, I think it was Chamath who mentioned he's like these organizations and these roles and these layers and these positions have all been built, you know, for decades around these big software solutions we put in place. I never really thought about it that way, but I've been in part of those big transformations, and you do kind of change your business processes to map to the, you know, what the capabilities of the whatever ERP or CRM is, because they're really hard to change. So for years, we've been kind of doing it that way. And I think one of the mistakes we could make is, you know, just putting agents in place or, you know, or even call them bots in place to do the same thing, because now if you were very siloed before, well, now you're going to have a bunch of siloed agents like that don't really work together. And maybe the incentives, you know, kind of are different from humans to agents. And so maybe that goes away, but that would be, I guess, one of the things that it feels like you have to reimagine your processes, right? So that you mentioned about systems engineering, you have to reimagine that. And that's going to be kind of hard for, I think, companies to understand and grasp.
Yeah, especially because they're so used to making incremental changes, not holistic rip and replace.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting to think about. I never thought about this until you mentioned it that way, but a lot of times in projects, so much of the effort, you know, project managers, me and you both have kind of shared that role, is translating between different functions. And as you're talking through that, I just thought about the fact that, like, the agent has such a shared vocabulary with other agents as it's working through this. So, like, if you have, like, a product management hat on as an LLM, and then you switch to a development hat as an LLM, like, they, you know, they speak both of those languages absolutely fluently. So, like, the translation loss and some of this handoff is so seamless. And it's kind of interesting to even think further about that, of, like, we come sometimes have it play these roles that kind of reenact what humans do, but, like, does it really need that? I wonder if we'll need, you know, start stripping these down a little bit more and just say, like, instead of, hey, you're a product manager and, hey, you're a developer, it's more of just, this is what we need to do, figure it out, and it'll kind of chart the path there. So I've always assumed the agent was kind of putting on a hat to act like a human, but now that you say that, I'm like, oh, it's kind of interesting to think about how they can be more holistic and bigger parts of these processes or flows that they're automating.
Yeah, and one of the things I really push on, especially on a data science or AI perspective, is, like, decompose that thing into a real small piece, right? And then scrappily put it in the hands of whoever, the business or the consumer, so they can say, yeah, that's what I want, or that's what I was thinking of, and then iterate towards that endpoint. And it's something that, obviously, when we went from waterfall to agile, from a, you know, kind of a systems development perspective, that's been around for a long time. But I still think, like, data engineering, data analytics, and data science have kind of lagged that. I think, you know, data, at least most of the data scientists I've worked with, has been like, well, you give me the problem, I don't want to solve, I want to get all the data and solve the big problem and build the amazing model. And it's like, well, if you cut that into, like, 1/10 and you give it to somebody, right, and they say, no, that's not what I wanted, I wanted this, then you learned a great deal from that, right? So that's, I guess, thought number one. But I was thinking the other day, and for me, I mean, just like you guys, I'm sure you're using, you know, I'm using Gemini and ChatGPT constantly, and I'm iterating through stuff. I'm absolutely amazed at how quickly now I can iterate, you know, just a human to an LLM. I can iterate so fast now and create an app and iterate on it and show it and demo it. Well, if you had two agents talking to each other, they could do that 1,000 times, right? So then, you know, and at the end of the day, so if something on the other end is testing that also can iterate that rapidly, then it doesn't, and maybe it was the point Reagan was getting, it doesn't have to be really all that, you know, right, as long as it can iterate towards this right answer very, very rapidly, more rapidly than we can even understand and comprehend.
Yeah, it's like a massive optimized design of experiments.
Yeah.
Like, problem, you know, space that it can go across, and running those different scenarios and even generating a plan for those scenarios, which might be more comprehensive than a human could have originally generated to begin with. I think that's what's so fascinating, is when I see people using these generative tools, there are some that are really good at it because they've recognized the thought process that they have to go through to engage with it in the most effective way. And the same tool you give to a different person, and they're just kind of clueless on where to go and what to do. And I think it really comes down to, like, do you understand how to break the problem down in a very particular way to engage with it? And once those systems actually get used to that level of breaking the problem down, then they can start doing it with each other, to your point. Like, the agents can start effectively breaking those problems down with each other, which we started to see with ChatGPT and the advanced reasoning that they started to bake in to the process instead of you having to do those steps manually, right? I'm sure they learned from interactivity of how people were breaking down problem sets, which I just think is super fascinating.
Do you think that's the key to value for all this as you look ahead, Mike? Just like a final point, because we think about adoption, right? And I think about the average employee in a company sifting through eventually the future of all these agents existing. Lots of parallels to sifting through all the existing dashboards and insights that have been created by others to help answer questions, but still struggling to find the through line of, like, I have a question and this gets me the answer. Like, do you see just trying to find the right agent or understand how to prompt it and work with it as the biggest barrier? Or do you foresee other barriers to adoption, Mike?
There's, yeah, it's something I think about a lot, right? And I think there's this inertia in organizations, right, that exists because they've been doing things the way they do them. And I don't think, I'm trying to figure out what gets, a concern I have is there's some companies that are you know, diving in, trying, it's messy right now, right? We're at the beginning of this very massive change curve, but there are companies that are jumping in. And I guess maybe I'll put this on the way I've been thinking about it now is really, this is more about business transformation, right? And I know that's an overused term because we've been talking about that for years. But I think if you really look at this as the next evolution of business transformation and then very consciously go after, okay, where do I want to apply this technology, right? And then what do I need to do to be successful with this technology, right? And then, you know, run that as a small experiment or set of experiments until you, you know, either pivot or find value out of it and then kind of scale from there, I think, is the secret. But my concern is the companies that are like, yeah, whatever, this is a fad. It's like Google Glasses. It's just going to, I'm waiting for it to die. I'm like, ooh, I don't know how this is going to work for you, right? And I don't have a great answer for the non-adopters.
Us humans are kind of getting in the way of ourselves, right? And like the culture continues to come back just around the unlock that you could realize, but just everything that you need to manage from a change management standpoint to set yourself up for success, for sure.
Yeah. I know we're running up against time, but I'll say the one last trend I think we'll see in 2025 is human-only spaces, right? I think they're going to get so tired of agents and bots and everything else. And it's like, let's create these experiences, whether none of that's allowed, right? Inside and outside of work, where I think we'll see, you know, kind of human only, like no bots or AI in this conversation.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Put your phone in a locker, no text.
Enter the Faraday cage, yep.
So say it's like when you talk into the call center and you say, talk to a real person, you know, like try to get around the automation there. It's like, we'll have that experience and for whole space.
That was good. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for your time, Mike, today. If folks listening in want to get a hold of you, we'll drop your LinkedIn in the description. Is there any other shout outs or plugs you want to make before we go and wrap the episode today?
One plug I always say is if you're looking for some assistance with AI, look to practitioners, like look to people that have done it. There's a lot of hype out there. That's not going to end. Regardless, you know, that I think the AI team is amazing. We have some amazing folks on delivery. But regardless of where you go, just look for people that have been there, done that, because there's a lot of, you know, kind of lessons learned along the way.
That's all advice. Thanks, Mike. Really appreciate you joining our episode 21. For folks out there, this is AI or Die. You can listen anywhere you stream your podcasts. And we thank you again for listening. Take care, everybody.